Many people, both young and old, face growing uncertainty about their faith. They have tough questions and growing doubts. Some have been attending church for years. They're pondering questions about church and faith. Is it really true? Is it relevant? Why keep going? Let's make room for questions and doubts and strengthen faith.
In John Ortberg's book, No Doubt, and no is K-N-O-W, No Doubt, he shares how he received an email one day requesting 1,000 copies of one of his book. And he said he'd never received a request like that from anyone other than his mother. And so he was curious to find out the story behind it. Well, the email was from a man by the name of Kirk. He was a high-capacity corporate type of a guy. He was a father of three young daughters with really a brilliant future ahead of him until he found out that he'd been diagnosed with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. But Kirk was a believer and convinced that in the midst of tragedy, faith was the only hope. And he decided to use his final months to encourage the people he loved the most to reflect on what mattered the most. Now, the doctors told him that he probably had from 2 to 5 years to live, but he died in just 9 months. And after his death, John Ortberg attended a dinner that Kirk's family sponsored. It was attended by hundreds of people. And at that dinner, they watched a recording of Kirk sitting in a wheelchair, fighting for breath, speaking of his faith in God as the only force that could sustain him. And afterwards, Kirk's dad drove John to the airport and spoke of some of the difficulties in his own life, how his mother had died when he was only 4, and now in his 70s, he'd lost his son. But then he went on to share how he used to be an agnostic, but that he'd now become a Christ follower. And when Kirk's father shared that with John, John confessed and said, there's a mystery to faith that I can't fully understand. Now today, as we address a very challenging subject, I'd be the first to confess that there is indeed something that I think is difficult to fully understand. And my guess would be that if you've been around very much, that you've witnessed this for yourself. And here's what's difficult to fully understand. Why does tragedy destroy the faith of some and yet develops it in others? Incredible question. Wish I had the answer. Welcome to Academy Christian Church. We're glad you're here today, especially if you're joining us in person, but also if you're watching us online, or we have a great bunch of folks that are over at our Westside campus. And we've been doing this series called Room for Doubt. Because we really wanted to make some space for people to be able to acknowledge their doubts by addressing some questions that I think most people share in common. And so we have asked questions and we've tried to provide answers to such topics as, hey, is it normal for a person to have doubts? And I hope the answer is yes. I believe it's yes because I have experienced doubts myself. Is God really necessary? Hasn't the world figured out a way to operate or be here without him? Isn't the Bible full of myths and mistakes? And why is Jesus such a big deal? And I just encourage you, if you missed any of those, you can go back and watch those online and catch up. But today we're arriving at the topic, why would God allow tragedy and suffering? Now, a number of years ago, a national survey asked people what they would say to God if they could ask God just one question. And the number one response, can you guess? Why is there suffering in the world? And I think John Stott kind of hits the nail on the head because he says, the fact of suffering undoubtedly constitutes the single greatest challenge to the Christian faith and has been in every generation. Its distribution and degree appear to be entirely random and therefore unfair. And sensitive spirits ask if it can possibly be reconciled with God's justice and his love. And see, the question of why God would allow suffering and tragedy really is as old as humanity, and as Stott has said, has been asked by every generation in the human race. And so I just want to kind of lower expectations today. I have no grand illusion that I'm going to be able to put this issue to rest for anyone here, including myself, but I still feel like it's a topic that needs to be address. And I think that more and more, because every week I read over the prayer requests that people turn in on their welcome cards or online, and I'm reminded of how many people come here with difficult burdens and almost impossible challenges. And being in ministry has given me a front row seat to people's lives in a lot of great ways. I've got to see people's joys and highlights and celebrations. But I've also had that front row seat for a lot of their hurts and their heartbreaks and their agonies as well. And so I just have to confess to you that I do feel woefully inadequate to address this topic today. Because what I've discovered over years is that there is nothing more challenging than trying to give a suffering person the kind of hope and encouragement that they specifically need. But let's go ahead and dig in. I'd like to start by offering just some general observations concerning tragedy and suffering. And these are just things that I've seen and I'm aware of. The first one would just be that there's no reasonable explanation for that which is unreasonable. And anytime you're suffering, what's it going to feel like? Pretty unreasonable. And making sense of what appears to us to be senseless can almost be impossible to try and comprehend. And when your circumstances, when they defy explanation, it can be kind of difficult to untangle your emotions, which can easily leave you kind of confused and frustrated, which is why many of us have probably asked God some pretty hard questions when we've been in those hard moments. We can easily question God's care for us, wonder why he would allow any struggles like that at all, and if he really is in control, why doesn't he do something? That'd be the first observation. The second observation would be that two people can go through nearly the same experience with very different responses. I've seen that time and time again. And if you haven't got there, you will, because Dr. R.T. Kendall, who's a well-known pastor from London, he said, I believe 100% of believers are eventually going to go through a period when God seems to let them down. So if you haven't gone through that yet, just kind of get ready because it's likely coming. And it may occur shortly after you become a Christ follower. Maybe the new convert all of a sudden loses their job, or their child becomes ill, or a business turns upside down or whatever. Or it could be maybe after faithfully serving him for many years. And then all of a sudden life suddenly starts to unravel and it makes no sense and it feels or seems so unfair. And here's what I've seen. Different people, when they get to those circumstances, for some, that becomes a setback to their faith. And then I've watched others, and it's like a setup for their growth in their faith. Third observation I would make would be this. While pain is inevitable, misery really is optional. It's optional. And let me see if I can give you an example of why I would say that. Let's say that you and I were engaged in a conversation, and all of a sudden, for no reason that you can see, I reach over and I quickly give you a really hard kick in the shin. I just kick you in the shin. Now, that'd be kind of painful, right? I think it would be painful. And you might move on, but maybe a couple weeks later, you find yourself thinking about that, and you wonder, why on earth did I ever do that to you? And then you end up finding yourself hurting all over again, even getting angry at the thought. In fact, the more you think about it, what happens? The more upset you become. And you know what that really means is that I just may as well be standing beside you and continually kicking you in the shin all over again. See, choosing to ruminate and be angry and upset and replaying a story in your mind is causing you unnecessary misery. And while I want to just be right up front with you, I promise to never kick you in the shins on purpose. You are going to have things happen to you suddenly, unexpectedly, that are painful and hard. Because pain is just a part of life, but it doesn't have to rule your life. And yes, misery can be a part of life, but more often than not, what creates misery for us involves our resistance to pain. And what everyone who suffers need to understand is that we don't ever come to suffering just empty-handed, because our lives are shaped not just by the pain we encounter, but also by what we bring to our suffering. And all of us bring something to our suffering. We have this bag full of experiences or expectations or assumptions or perspectives or desires or intentions or even decisions. We bring those into our suffering. And so you never just suffer the thing that you are suffering, but you also suffer how you suffer that thing. And so I got to tell you, what you think about yourself, what you think about life, what you think about God, what you think about others has a huge effect on how you interact with and respond to the difficulties that come your way in life. And really, just who you are as a person makes a big difference. You may have heard the story about twin boys who by the age of 6 had developed some extremes in their personalities to the point that their parents had gotten a little bit concerned about them. And one of the twins, as you might imagine, was always optimistic, happy, joyful, all of the time, while the other was always, as you might imagine, pessimistic and complaining and whining about everything. Well, their parents were really growing concerned over how these differences in their personalities would affect their lives, and so they decided, hey, they probably should see a psychiatrist. And so the psychiatrist started with really just the more pessimistic child and thought he would see that if he could brighten the child's outlook by presenting him with a room completely full of brand new toys. But instead of responding with delight, the kid literally like burst into tears. And puzzled by the response, the psychiatrist said, well, hey, what's the matter? And the little boy said, well, you see that toy right over there? That's broken. And that toy right over there, that needs batteries. And he literally found something negative to say about every toy in the room. Well, then the psychiatrist directed his attention toward the optimistic twin. And in an attempt to dampen his outlook, the psychiatrist presented him with a room filled with nothing but horse manure. But instead of responding with repulsion, as they were thinking, the optimistic child literally shouted with delight as he climbed up to the top of the manure pile and began joyfully digging scoop after scoop with his bare hands. And when the psychiatrist, completely taken back by that response, said to him, what are you doing? The boy said, what am I doing? Wow, he said, with all this manure, there's just got to be a pony in here somewhere. I'm going to find the pony. I guess what I'd say the moral of the story could be that when life gives you manure, maybe you ought to try to ignore the manure and start looking for the pony. I think we spent enough time together that you probably know I tend to be fairly optimistic. And I know that that's a choice that you and I get to make about how we choose to interpret the things that happen to us in life, which then actually determines how we experience those things. And what I've seen is that the apparent incongruence between a loving God and our personal suffering, that can become, if we're not careful, a spiritual minefield. That's where a lot of people's faith breaks down, but it doesn't have to. And so we don't have time today to cover it as in depth as we should. I've included in your notes there just some resources. There are literally dozens of books that people have written to help people kind of navigate what happens when they experience difficulties. And so just a few I included: Trusting God Even When Life Hurts, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering, Hope When It Hurts, Where Is God in All the Suffering. See, a lot of people have dealt with that on some great things, and I would encourage you to avail yourself of that. But even more, make sure you spend time in God's Word, because sometimes your faith in God is the only thing that can prepare you for what might happen. And I'll let Richard Stamba tell you his story.
I'm Richard Stamba. My wife is Dorothy Stamba. And we came to Colorado Springs in 1970. And we had 4 children at the time. David was the oldest. He was born at first, and we had Susan and Nancy and Jennifer. Jennifer was the youngest child, daughter. Jennifer was 7 months old, and she got some kind of a virus. And I remember holding her in my arms right before we took her to the hospital. She died there on the 20th of December, right before Christmas she was buried. And we have nothing against God that she died. And we don't understand everything that God does for us, but He's good. He loves us, and He's good. We have no bad feelings about things like that. And so our second daughter, Nancy, she was married, she was a Christian, and she was married to a non-Christian person. She took her own life, and what caused her to do that, her husband wanted a divorce, but he didn't want to really do the divorce, so he did everything he possibly could to have her take her own life, which she did. Our other daughter, Susan, it was back in 2013, she was diagnosed with a leukemia, a rare leukemia. And she was told that she would have less than a year to live. But I prayed and prayed for her, and she got a pill that she could take. It cost $11,000 a month. And she was on the pill probably for 8 years or so. And she decided she wanted to get off of the pill. And she was the only person who was able to get off of the pill without having to go back on it forever. So she went off, and she's still living 6 years now that she's been. She's a nurse in a hospital in Kodiak, Alaska. Yeah, God had a plan for us. He has a plan for us, and He does things we don't understand, but He's good. He cares for us, and He wants the best for us.
That's an example of the mystery of faith. Something that's hard to clearly understand, how somebody can go through something that hard and still say, hey, God's good. He's got a plan. He's carrying it out. But it has to do with the faith that Richard and his wife developed. And I got to say, if you're a young person here today, man, lean into your faith, because you never know when you're going to need it really to support you. And a faith that leaves you unprepared for suffering is not a faith that's built on biblical truth. And so let me see today, I'd like to just offer to you 3 mental constructs, ways of thinking that can actually bolster your faith instead of deconstructing it. Because a lot of times when we experience hard things in life, it tends to deconstruct our faith. And if you've ever wondered, why didn't just God create a world where tragedy and suffering didn't exist? And the answer is, he actually did. Remember in Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, it says, God saw all that He had made, and it was very good. Problem is, humanity took a little bit of their own detour. And so the first construct would be this. While God undoubtedly allows it, He Himself is not the source of evil and suffering. When God decided to create human beings, He wanted us to experience love. But in order to give you and I the ability to love, He had to give us the freedom to decide not to love if we wanted to. Why? Because real love always involves a choice. And in order for us to experience real love, God created human beings with free will. And so we can choose. And unfortunately, though, we've chosen to abuse our free will and reject God and walk away from him and not obey him. And it didn't take very long for humanity to get there. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, even at that point, it said, "The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time." And it can be easy for some of us to say, "Well, yeah, because there's a lot of other evil people out there. I'm better than that." But I came across a statement that was made by Johnny Erickson Tada, who was a young lady as a teenager, and in a diving accident became a quadriplegic, and could have been angry at God, was for a little while, but God's used her to do some amazing, amazing things. And what she stated was, she says, "We rant and rave against God for the evil we have to endure, but hardly blink at the evil that is in our own hearts." Now, do I wish God would not have allowed the presence of evil in the world? I mean, who wouldn't? But he's God. And so what I would say is, you don't have to agree with God if you don't want to, but you do need to concede to him. You know why? Because he gets to call the shots. The second mental construct that I would offer you today is that though suffering is never pleasant, God can and does use it for your benefit. Now, the problem is that things are happening to us and we don't see what's coming down the road. God does, because he already looks into the future, and so he can actually plan in reverse. But it reminds me of the story of a farmer who had a son. The son went off to a market one day and came back with this beautiful black stallion. Looked like it was going to be a good thing to have on the farm. But it wasn't very long that the stallion actually ran away. And when the other villagers were all told about it, you know, it would be terrible, they all said, oh, that's bad. And the farmer said to them, "Well, how do you know?" And sure enough, a few days later, the horse actually returned and brought like 5 or 6 horses with it. And so they gathered together the villagers, and they talked about it. And the villager says, "Oh, that's good." And the farmer said, "Well, how do you know?" And sure enough, a few days later, the farmer's son was trying to get the horse ready to ride, was trying to break the horse, bucked him off, and he broke his leg. And so again they gathered, and the villagers said, "Oh, that's bad." And the farmer said, "How do you know?" Because a week or two later, the army came through town conscripting soldiers because there was a war they had to go fight, and they left the farmer's son there. You know why? Because his leg was broken. And the villagers said, "Oh, that's good." And the farmer said, "How do you know?" Because see, there are things that are happening in our life that we don't know that are coming that God does. We have to recognize God can use things for our benefit. Now, on several occasions, I've spoken over the last few years about how difficult ministry has been in the last season. Painful, discouraging. But when I say that, at the same time where I'm at right now, I have to acknowledge that it was some of the most beneficial time in my life for me to grow as a person. And very often we don't understand how God is presently working in our lives and how he actually intends to bring both benefit and long-term blessing. And we've seen that in some amazing ways. Romans chapter 5, the Apostle Paul tried to get us to say, hey, not only so, but we can actually rejoice in our sufferings because God uses them for our good. They can produce perseverance and character and hope, and the list goes on and on. And just recently, another great example of that, Julie Nielsen, our former children's pastor, was out in California, Palm Springs area, visiting her mother. And, of course, she shared how after the January 7th Southern California fires began, a lot of people from the L.A. area actually relocated to the Palm Springs area, and they were devastated. But you know what? Something was stirring in their hearts, and that's when a church in the area hosted an event at their church for them to come together and worship. And God used his people to get their attention and speak to them. And from that one event, 250 people gave their lives to Christ, which, you know, from an eternity standpoint is way more important than anything else happening. See, suffering is going to happen, and it either can lead you to despair or to your development. And a thought that I would want you to hold in your mind is this: life doesn't just happen to you. Life actually also happens for you. so that you can grow, so that you can develop. But you have to decide what you're going to do with it. And an individual, I think, embodies that pretty well. If you haven't heard of a guy by the name of Vic Vovoychik, he was born with a rare disorder that prevented him from growing any arms or legs. And he could sit back and say, wow, I've gotten such a terrible, you know, deal in life. Life's awful. But Nick, through his faith in God, decided that his disability didn't have to disable him. And so, you know, he's learned how to swim. And as you can see, he learned how to play golf and a myriad of other things. He's also married, has three children, and he loves God and uses his story to encourage others. And when it comes from him, I think I want to listen more. I have the choice to be angry at God for what I don't have or what I'm going through, or to be thankful for what I do. And you know, the longer I live, the more suffering I've both seen others experience as well as experienced personally. But at the same time, I've also witnessed more God moments when he steps in and heals or provides or leads or guides than I ever thought possible. And our spiritual life is going to be lived in the tension between those two experiences, our suffering and God's work. And I appreciate what Peter Kreeft had to say when it comes to suffering. He says, you know, God's ultimate answer isn't explanation, which we're really dying for. It's actually incarnation. Jesus is here with us in our lowest places. And that all started when God took the worst thing, the horrific and undeserved death of the innocent Son of God on the cross, and he turned that into the best thing that ever happened. And if he can do that with that, what can he do with what happens in our life? Mental construct number three. Regardless of what goes on in this world, the evil that's here, the day is coming when suffering is going to cease. And evil will be punished and the innocent vindicated. That's what we're longing for. And I think there may be times when you find yourself tempted to think, hey, what good is it to really be a God follower? I mean, I don't seem to be any better off than those who, man, outright reject his authority. In fact, sometimes they even appear to be faring better than God's own people. And if you've ever felt that way, don't worry, you're not alone. The writer of the Psalms suggests the same dichotomy when he writes in Psalm 73 and expresses really frustration after comparing his life to those people around him who could care less about God and what's right and appears to be on the brink of giving up on his faith. And we know that because in verse 13 in that chapter, he says, surely in vain I've kept my heart pure and washed my hands in innocence. All day long, you know, I've been afflicted, and every morning brings new punishments. Has your life ever felt like that? But then he goes on in verse 16 and says, you know, when I tried to understand all that, it troubled me deeply. Till he got a different perspective. I entered the sanctuary of God, and I understood their final destiny. I saw the long game. And when it comes to the evil and the suffering in this world, what we always have to keep in the perspective, folks, is that God has the last word. And it's not like anybody's going to get around that. So that's why I'm really so thankful for the book of Revelation. Because in spite of all the confusing apocalyptic language, you read the book, you read the end of it, it's clear in the end that God's will prevail. And so with this whole idea of suffering, I think the question that haunts us is why. We want to know why. Why did it happen? Why does it have to happen? Why are we going through that? Why didn't God do something to keep it from happening? But, you know, why is the question that most eludes us. And it could be because that might be the wrong question. Maybe even the unanswerable question this side of life. And asking why rarely produces either clarity or comfort. Because it doesn't change your suffering. In fact, maybe our why question sometimes leads to just the opposite, kind of a downward spiral if you've seen it. And so probably the best question is not why, but maybe what? In light of this tragedy, in light of this great loss that I'm experiencing, in light of the great grief that weighs so heavily, what is it that I believe? And then what should I do about it? And when you get to suffering, that's going to be the difference. And being angry with God to the point of rejecting him is not going to change anything about the suffering in the world or your own personal suffering. But it can contribute, if you're not careful, to you becoming a bitter and resentful person. Because you see, we all get to choose if our life experiences are going to cause us to become bitter or better. And we're going to wrap up our service a little differently this morning. Because I just thought we need to offer an opportunity, because some of you are sitting there and are going through some hard things. We've seen that all morning so far. And maybe where you're starting to feel a little bit bitter. Because it's hard. It's painful. And you'd like to maybe turn a corner and get it to better. We have a prayer team that's assembled this morning. And if you are serving on that team, I'd like you to go ask you to go ahead and come forward if you're on that team. Kind of spread out if you can. We've got some men and women. We have some couples that are coming. And these are people who've said, hey, I'll pray with people who need prayer today. And if you're sitting out there and you can sense a bitterness coming into your life, I would pray that you would avail yourself of these folks who said, hey, I'll stand with you. I'll pray with you. And so in a moment, I'm going to pray. And then after I pray, we're going to stand together and we're going to sing. And it could be something simple, could be something hard. Whatever it is, I'd encourage you to let go of some of those burdens today with some of these folks who love Jesus and would like to minister to you. And they'll stick around afterwards for a little while if you want to come up later. But let's do some business with God today. Not necessarily knowing exactly why, but just knowing who and what we believe. Father, I thank you for some time to talk today about one of the hardest things in dealing with our faith. It's when there's suffering and there's tragedy and there's pain in our lives. But God, I'm so thankful that you're here, because really, knowing you and knowing about you, that's the only thing that ultimately makes any sense, in spite of the awkwardness of that. And so I pray for hearts today that are just struggling with a weight and maybe sensing some hopelessness. Pray that you'd give them some hope. God, you've shown us over and over again your faithfulness. We want to believe in that and live in it. Help us to do that together today, Father. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen.